jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Welcome to the sixth pre-season Supercoach Coach podcast of 2018 and the last before we head into lockout. My name's Marcus and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. I am very disappointed you have not embraced the Captain Hindsight moniker.
Well, I know I don't have to because you will remind me of that moniker every single week. Exciting week this week because the team sheets will drop and, of course, that will dictate the amount of rookies we get to start on field and therefore our starting structures. So they're still a little bit up in the air.
They always are a bit, mate. And you're looking for lines that have a bit depth. I think one strategy that I've always liked is maybe don't pick every rookie that's available on that line. Like if you can leave an okay rookie out of your team, that means, like, if you need to downgrade or switch, so you've got someone to go to, it means you're not, like, stretching as far as you can. So, yeah, there's going to be a bit of scramble come Thursday, Friday.
Before we get into the crux of the show, we'll just promote our Supercoach Coach leagues and our groups again. If you haven't already, this is obviously the absolute last chance that you have to do so. Only 4 days until lockout at recording, so jump on board. And a shout out to our Patreons as well. Over the course of the preseason, we've had a massive influx, almost a doubling of our existing patron base. So a massive, massive thank you to all our new supporters. If we keep this rate going, Mark, there's a better and better shot that we get to stick around next year and moving forward. So we do want to emphasize that we couldn't do the show without you. We're not just saying that as lip service. It does mean a lot to us that you are putting your hands in your own pockets and supporting the show and supporting us. We've been doing this for 10 years.
And this is not like a cash grab strategy. We're not saying, hey, we're going to finish if you guys don't put in. It's not like that at all. Like, we're genuinely like, this is not something that we can do currently. That doesn't mean that things wouldn't change though.
And, you know, we've been doing this for 10 years now. And this year was sort of the big landmark to hit and then to reassess. So really, really do appreciate it. And we can't thank you enough for your support. And even for those of you who don't have the ability to support us, still thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. Thank you for your kind words. Thank you for submitting questions. It's the last preseason show before we go into lockout. And we've received a lot of love over the preseason. And that's much appreciated. I mean, the dollars are one thing, but the community is our biggest driver and why we've been able to keep it going for 10 years so far as well. So a massive shout out and thanks to all of you out there. For our Patreons, we have released, Mark, a Supercoach team that we picked together only a couple of days ago. So it's a bit of a team template. It's a good starting position and might give you a bit of team-spiration if you're stuck for ideas and give you a bit of a guiding light.
Yeah, well, it looks like we were a fair way apart in that discussion, mate, and when we were sort of coming to create a joint team, and this may be one of the first years that you have not just copied my starting team.
Good to hear, mate. Good to hear. So better not get crap for that once we go into the season proper. But nonetheless, for our patrons who haven't yet seen that, please jump onto patreon.com/supercoachcoach. The patron exclusive content, which is the team selection and our reasonings behind why we came to that starting team, are available there. And to anybody who's not yet subscribed, they're looking for a little bit of an extra reason to potentially support the show, patreon.com/supercoachcoach. You can get a starting team that Mark and I picked together as a bit of advice to take into 2018.
I think just one of the things that might actually help the listeners is that you really explained how we went through that decision-making process and where we made compromises. So anybody that reads that won't just get the team. They'll actually understand where we probably differ on how we would approach the team.
Yeah, we've got some pretty decent feedback on it. So I think it's definitely useful. Hopefully your patrons appreciate it. And anyone who's considering supporting us, maybe that might tip you over the edge. I do want to mention, we talk about a dollar a week, but you can actually subscribe to be a patron from a dollar a month. So even if you just want to put a token amount in to say thanks, you can do that as well. So, all right, enough of that, Mark. Let's get into the show, hey? First question here is from Moosey, and this one's a bit to set the tone of the
Bloody
Rookies
Moosey.
Podcast. of the Rookies podcast. So if you hadn't heard across our preseason so far, we'll be covering rookies and a JLT recap this show. So Moosey's first question here is, how much weighting do you put in on return on investment for rookies versus scoring? So in other words, do you look toward how much cash you can gain from a potential rookie selection or how high they can score? So probably the wrinkle in that is how expensive a starting rookie is and whether or not they're worth paying the extra amount of dosh for their scoring, even though they won't make potentially the same amount of cash on your initial investment. Where do you sit on that, Mark? Do you tend to try and find some rolled gold players and some cash cows? Do you try and find a hybrid? How do you approach that?
It's been a really interesting learning process over the last few years on that question, because since they've made the top 10 draft picks so much more expensive than they were in the past, this question becomes a lot more relevant. And I think at the start, we were probably more inclined to just keep picking the top 10 draft picks at 200, 220,000, 180,000. But what seems to have worked out is that that's a really tricky price point, and it's actually really hard to make much money at that price point. And so if you can get a rookie at the basement, like at 120 or cheaper, that is actually going to average within 10 points or so of the top 10 draft pick and has good job security, then you're almost always better off going that cheaper option, because that money really will add up to your team. And they might end up at pretty close to the same max price point, but you're sort of getting an extra 70, 80,000 profit, but you're also getting an extra 70, 80,000 that you can invest in other places in your team. So the short answer is that I actually probably give a lot more weight to that than I used to. And this season, currently, I only have one player in my team that's likely to be sort of over 180,000 in the rookie bracket. I think that I probably wouldn't have more than three over 150,000, especially that are sort of top 10 draft picks from last year. Maybe even cap that at two. The other consideration, sorry, I don't want to go too long on this, but the other consideration is that how many people in that position are actually available. So we'll talk about Stevenson later. And if there's not many forward rookies available at the cheaper price, all of a sudden he maybe becomes more relevant and someone that you're more likely to pick just because there's not many other options.
As you've already referenced, it is very much contextual. How many rookies are you trying to play in each line? How high scoring are those rookies? But the main things that I consider are they playing on field or are they on bench? If you're picking a player for your bench spot, you're much more interested on being able to gain a whole bunch of cash from that rookie downgrade than you are scoring. You don't need a 90 scoring rookie if they're sitting on your bench. So, you know, this year we're talking about looking at, or we will talk about starting quite a deep backline rookie team. In those instances, you want to prioritize scoring because you don't want to have three rookies on field scoring 50s for you. So where they're playing is a massive one. And then the other part of it, and probably the main thing that I look at when comparing rookies is comparing them to mid prices. So I really like the mid prices that are in the low 200K price bracket. A rookie needs to be able to match what a player returning from injury or a potential breakout candidate at that price range, like an Alan Christensen, can do. If they're not potentially able to match that type of scoring, then they might not be worth the dollars. And instead of taking a risk on the rookie, you might try and find, you know, a player returning from injury instead. So that's probably the other factor that I look at. If I can, I prefer to take a mature age player at that 200K price bracket than a brand new rookie.
There are really good points, mate. And I think that one of the biggest mistakes that I see people make is actually putting these expensive rookies on the bench. So that was the first point you raised, that you just don't want 180,000 sitting on your bench in one player for the start of the season. Like, if you're going to be paying that price, they've got to be at least in your intention is to start them on field.
I think it also depends on which position the rookie's playing in. In the back line, I'm looking at 80 to 85 to pay over the 200K mark. In the forward line, and probably 85 to 90. In the midfield, 90 to 95. I mean, those are pretty rough, and it'll depend on year to year as to what rookies are available, what mid prices are available. But as a rough guide, depending on where they start, you're also probably looking for a different level of scoring, because at the end of the day, you compare their upside to what a premium could score in that spot. All right, Mark, let's get on to the actual players now, and we'll start in the back line. I think the way we'll approach it is let's cover the players fairly quickly and then talk about structures and who we prefer and what that's sort of looking like and what you should consider when actually finalizing your team post-team sheet. So let's start off with a player that I've already referenced, Nick Caulfield, 171,000 and a def mid swing player, a top 10 draft pick, and his spot looks reasonably secure in the back line. I think scoring potential, though, is still a little bit of a question mark for his starting price tag. Mark, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree with that. He averaged about 55 over the preseason, over two games. He is a bit of a skinny kid, which means that he could struggle to justify that expensive price. Depends a lot on how deep you're going in your back line. So if you've got four rookies on field or three rookies on field, then those expensive guys become a lot more relevant, I think, because you want sort of, not that he's guaranteed points, but sort of maybe more reliable, higher level rookies that are more likely to play each week.
Now, of all the defenders that we will talk about, Mark, only Caulfield and Finlayson are def mid players. Does that change how you approach a player like Caulfield? Does that added flexibility improve his selection prospects?
Look, no, not really with the defensive mid link, because I just don't imagine having anyone at any stage that's going to be able to link up with them. Like it could happen, but it's in that position, no, it's not something that I'm really considering.
Next bloke, Mark, is Thomas Cole from West Coast Eagles, 170,000. He's age 21, so a mature age player. Played both the JLT games, scoring 63 and 67. Those are not too bad stats, but he's not really being widely circulated as a potential rookie. But I know in our community, we've paid a little bit more attention to him. Where do you sit on him at the moment?
Yeah, I've probably got him a little bit ahead of Caulfield at the moment, to be completely honest, just because he's that bit more mature age and seems maybe his position is even more likely to come up every week. So yeah, just ahead of Caulfield at the moment.
Probably the same. I think as a general rule, you like to start rookies that are a little bit older, even if their scoring doesn't necessarily reflect that in the JLT. Over the course of 8, 10 AFL games before you trade them out, a younger rookie is more likely to be rested or to have down patches because they're just so sore dealing with the rigors of AFL. Whereas a Thomas Cole is more likely to be able to, I think, you know, rounds 4, 5, 6, be a little bit more resilient than Caulfield. Mitch Hibbard's the next bloke that we have to talk about. He was actually in my team for most of last year. I think maybe even all of last year at 169,000. He only played like three games or something like that. But I tracked his season because, yeah, he was sitting in my team the whole year. And he was basically affected by concussion or injury for most of the year and just couldn't get back on the park. And when he did, generally was impressive enough to, he forced himself back into the team late in the season. So actually thought that he might be an option this year, but there's just so many backline options that he hasn't been sort of front of mind, but certainly a potentially decent selection.
Yeah, have first, you had him in your team at all? And I heard that he won their North Melbourne time trial, which is a huge effort for a young man. I do have a North Melbourne friend that I respect a lot and asked him about Hibbert, and he said, great athlete, crap at footy. So that turned me off a fair bit.
All right, next bloke, Aaron Norton, 167,000 for the Western Bulldogs. Marcus Adams has gone down only in the last few days, out for 12 weeks with an injury. Yeah,
he's pretty close probably to first locked in the back line. 73 over the JLT. If he produces those numbers, that's a really good result.
Yeah, played senior footy in WA last year, so yeah, looks a fair lock. Next bloke, Cam O'Shea, 166,000, former Port player. Has played, you know, almost 100 games at 81. Went back to VFL last year, did well enough to get recruited by Carlton this year, but has been largely unsighted in the preseason, and I think he was in a lot of starting sort of Supercoach teams when Supercoach first opened, but has since dropped right off. Probably not in
only
consideration
played
24% for
mine. Game time in the one that he did and scored 60 points because the game was alive at the end. I really don't know why he wasn't playing earlier than that. So if you have a really good understanding of that and you think he's going to keep playing, he's not a bad pick being a mature ager. Not in my team, though.
He's a bit more of that dour, tall defender that wouldn't necessarily score a whole bunch of points, and his 81 games so far has shown that. Now, another bloke that's probably as locked as Aaron Norton is Tom Dodie. He's been long touted as the replacement for Lever, and that's pretty much played out over the course of the preseason. Scored 86 and 56 awesome in the two scores. JLT.
He's not a guarantee for round one, so be prepared that if he doesn't get selected, have a backup plan. Otherwise, he should be definitely in your team if he is picked.
All right, next bloke, Jeremy Finlayson from GWS, 124,000. Mark, you referenced him in the backline show when you said that he started taking some of those kickouts from the goal line during the JLT that we were hoping Heath Shaw would get. I'm guessing that bodes well for his Supercoach prospects, Mark.
I think that bodes very well, mate. Very good kick of the footy. The only concern that I have over him is that Sam Reed just destroyed him in a 10-minute patch in JLT2. Hopefully that's not what the selectors are thinking about round one, but if he's picked, you've got to pick him. His scoring potential seems pretty decent for his price.
Sam Murray, 124,000. Collingwood traded him for a second-round draft pick from Sydney. Pretty much been playing as though he's ready for a round one berth, Mark, and probably equally locked with sort of Norton, Dodie.
Yeah, if he's named round one, I think you got to pick him after 102 in JLT2. So all of a sudden, after the discussion we've had, there's quite a few defensive rookies that are looking like locks.
Yeah, and I think when we talk about structures and the structures that you've referenced so far this preseason or last week when we went through the backline show, it points toward a pretty deep backline for rookies. Lachlan Keefe, Mark, GWS player now, former Pie. After he got suspended due to that innocuous supplements incident, he's...
Innocuous. Yep. Okay, that's one way to describe it, mate.
He's not managed to return to the AFL, but this year might be the year, and it might be in our Supercoach teams. He's a deaf forward swingman, which is a little bit interesting. I know people are looking at pairing him with James Sicily. I don't know if that flexibility alone, though, is enough to get a player across the line, but... certainly a decent chance for games as well this year. Would you be considering Keefe at all, Mark?
Yeah, I think a lot of people will be considering him, if not for their starting side, but they will consider him at some point during the year, especially if they pick Sicily to start with them, and he has very high percentage ownership. So if you've got Sicily, even if you pick Keefe in the back line and Sicily in the back line, like, you can make that switch later. It's not totally imperative that you do the switch now. If Keefe isn't named, you could use him to loophole the best back rookie score onto the field in week one or week two. The thing that I like about Keefe is that he is a multi-positional player in the sense that he could come in as a backup ruck, he could come in as a forward, he could come in as a defender. And I know that the Giants do have a bit of depth where maybe he's not first in line in those positions. You'd think that he would get games over the course of the season. So didn't score amazing in the JLT, scored 59 in the second one, even though he played a half in the NEAFL before the game. Yeah, I think that he is someone that definitely should be in the conversation.
I mean, if he's selected round one, I'd consider him, but I don't know that I'd necessarily be picking him as a floating donut, assuming that he's a decent shot to get games. Because even though that's true, it might not happen till later on when you might want to open him up as a downgrade target rather than being sort of stuck with him already in your team.
But I don't think that you have Sicily, do you?
No, I don't. But even if I did, I don't know if that's necessarily a good enough reason to take a subpar pick. Like, I don't know if that flexibility is good enough. I know that the potential is there to score more points, but the games where GWS and Hawthorn play need to line up so that you're able to actually use Keefe as a loophole, and it needs to be relative to the defensive and forward rookies that you actually have on bench and on field. So, I mean, yes, the opportunity is there, but it might not actually pay any dividends, and so I wouldn't want to make a subpar selection on the off chance that you might be able to use him a bit more flexibly.
Okay.
Next player is Riley Stoddart, 117,000. I actually don't know a huge amount about him, Mark, but he's playing for Sydney, which I'd assume means it's slightly harder to crack into the team. But we have got questions about him, and he did play in JLT1, scoring 6 points, and then in the 60 points, and then in the next game scored 22. Do you think he's going to start round one, Mark?
There was a bit of a pumping up article on AFL.com today about him. So they obviously like a bit about him at Sydney, but a bit of competition for spots, scoring potential not really shown over the JLT. So look, I guess depending on who's named, he could come into consideration, but not likely to make my team.
Yeah. Now, Brody Michocek, is that how you pronounce it? Anyway, 102K, 25 years old, played for Port Melbourne, the VFL last year. Basically a dowered defender that will punch more than he marks. Is a cheap option for your bench, but you wouldn't want him on field. But personally, I think I'm less likely to start him than to start him. He's the sort of bloke that even if he plays will probably score, you know, 30, 40.
Yeah, and you've seen that's probably not enough. I guess the thing that draws you to him is the mature ageness and the 102,000. So even if he averaged 40 and got up to 230, that's not really the worst result. So not likely to make my team at this stage, but depending on how deep you run in defence with the rookies.
Mm. Lachlan Murphy from Adelaide is similarly priced at that basement 102K. Played in the Sandful last year for the Crows and was a surprise call up in the rookie draft, but now is looking like a potential selection in the Adelaide Best 22. Would play in a fairly similar spot to what Charlie Cameron was doing last year. Do you think he's a chance to play, Mark? And have you had him in your team at all?
Hasn't been in my team, but if you look at his scoring over the preseason, it's actually really good. So 75 and 52 off just 60% game time is awesome for a $100,000 player available as a defender. Really mixed reports from Adelaide fans about whether he will make the round one side. Can't get a clear response there. I guess he's the sort of player that if he does make it, he'd be a chance to perform and keep his spot, or he could drop out. So reasonably low job security, you'd think, if he does get picked, but at that 100,000 could turn out to be a really good selection.
That's the last one of our backline rookies to discuss, Mark. So we'll move on to a question about structures now. So Kane Arnold's thinking about running four rookies on field in the backline because it seems like that's where all the rookies are this year. And is wondering whether we're looking similarly structurally. Mark, do you want to take that question?
Given the discussion that we've just had, there does seem to be a fair bit of rookies available in the back line. Hopefully they all come up, or a lot of them come up at the selection table. I guess that really comes down to team balance. Like, if you do run four, you are really exposed down there to those rookie scores. So, they'd need to score quite well. So, I guess it depends on how many forward rookies come up, which we will get to, what's their scoring like, and how many midfield rookies are you going to include. So, although there does seem to be a lot of defensive rookies, you do want to have some sort of balance to your team. And I think three or four defensive rookies on field is probably the right number.
Yeah. I agree with that. And that means that either way, even with three rookie backline players on field, that you're running a fairly deep backline rookie team. And that's precisely why last week, Mark, sort of goes along with what we were thinking in terms of premium selections down back. It's tough to select good premium defenders this year. That seems to be the case at the start of the season anyway. So it's good to be able to offset that with just the glut of rookie defenders available. I think we'd be in a lot more pain if we had a weak defensive rookie selections to pick from, and also be struggling to pick the actual premium defenders as well. Can we just go through the locks and the flex players before we move on?
Sure.
Norton, Dodie, Murray, Finlayson. I'm pretty much going to be starting those four blokes if named. Would you be
in agreement with that? Yeah, if named, obviously. Yep.
Yeah. And then after that, probably the front runners are Caulfield, Cole, Keefe for people who have Sicily. Anybody else you
Caulfield and Cole. Caulfield and Cole being the front runners, just being mindful that they are more expensive. And then you start getting into who's selected out of the Stoddard, Miocek, Murphy sort of line, where if he's selected, I'd have Murphy ahead in that group.
All right, awesome. Now let's move to the midfield, Mark. We'll start off with the most expensive player that we're considering here, and that's Andrew Brayshaw from Frio at $198,000. Of all the players that are more expensively priced, he looks to have the most scoring potential in terms of his first year of AFL. He scored 87 and 97 in his first two JLT games, and off the back of that will be in quite a few teams and probably has overtaken Luke Davis Uniaki, who is, you know, at the start of the preseason, the number one gun in terms of an expensive midfield rookie.
This is one of those questions, getting back to Moosey's point earlier, where in the midfield, if he's playing on field, you do want to be locking in some points rather than just value. And Brayshaw, based on what we've seen in the NAB, like, you've just got to pick him.
Well, I mentioned when we were answering Moosey's questions that in the midfield, I'd be looking at sort of a 90 to 95 averaging rookie in order to be worth a 200K price tag, and Brayshaw's 87 and 97 sort of sit pretty much bang on in the middle of that. So I'd agree with that, Mark. Paddy Dow or LDU are about 190K each, and are probably the two other, you know, first round draft picks that everyone's hyping up in terms of a potential rookie selection. I'm guessing if you pick Brayshaw, you're a lot less likely to pick either of those two blokes to pair with him.
That's exactly right. They just haven't done enough over the preseason for either of them to be justified being selected, I don't think. And there's enough other options that unless selections like really don't go our way in the midfield, then I don't see there would be any need to be picking those two guys at this stage.
I guess you can probably chuck Hunter Clark in with that as well at 176,000.
Yeah, and look, I do want to just forecast that I could definitely be wrong here. And if you have a really strong belief in one of these guys, then preseason form is definitely not everything, because I remember like Heppel scored 20 in his last preseason game and averaged 80 plus for the season. Andy McGrath last year, I think he scored a couple of 30s and averaged 75. So preseason does not necessarily represent what these guys are going to do in the main stuff. But based on probabilities, Brayshaw's a lock and the others are probably skippable.
Well, another bloke who's more expensive but might be an exception to this is Will Brody, just because he's spent an extra year in the system. He's a tall inside mid that was selected pick 9 in the previous draft, but just couldn't quite crack it into the Gold Coast side last year, playing only 3 games. He scored 72 and 64 in the first 2 JLT series games, and you'd think that he's basically a lock for the Suns team now that they're Ablett-less. Is Brody one that you might be pairing with Brayshaw?
Yeah, depending on how deep you go in the midfield rookies. So if I have 3 on field, then Brody will almost certainly be one of them. I'm a big fan of Will Brody.
All right, Mark, now on to cheaper selections. Quite a few of these are actually pretty tempting in the back line, and the first one's almost certainly locked. Tim Kelly for Geelong, 23-year-old. Mature age recruit from WA, played JLT 1 and 2, and in both of those did enough to suggest that he'll score well, scoring 72 and 68, playing only, you know, 60% game time in that first game when he scored 72. So in terms of points per minute, he's right up there. In terms of cheap Supercoach rookies, basically a lock.
Yep. I think all our listeners could hear how excited you were when you were talking through that.
How about Dom Berry, Mark? Would you consider him in the same level, a Foreman demon that got redrafted to Port Adelaide after a bit of time in the wilderness?
Yeah, I think if he's named round one, you got to pick him. Mature ager, just with scoring potential.
99 in the first JLT, which is huge. And actually a higher points per minutes than Kelly, scoring 58 in his second game as well off a low percent game time. Next bloke, Nick Shipley from GWS at 117,000. Played the 2 JLT, scoring 60 and 44, and is quite strong in contested situations. To be honest, Mark, I'm not as knowledgeable on Shipley. Do you know much about him?
Yeah, so he's a local selection for the GWS team, and I think they will want to get games into him from what Wayne Campbell has said. His scoring wasn't sensational, but I mean, he's a bench position and he's a cheap player in your midfield. Depending on how selections go, I think he's a good potential backup if he's named.
All right, next bloke, Braden Ainsworth for the West Coast Eagles at the same price at 117,000. Played in the Waffle last year for Subiaco and then got drafted following a good season as an overage player. Played both JLT matches but didn't score a huge amount of points, and so hasn't been sort of at the forefront of discussions, but certainly a decent chance of getting games this year with the retirements of Pritis and Mitchell from the Eagles midfield.
I think a player that I'd maybe hope to downgrade to at some point. JLT scoring was terrible, and so I think that rules him out of realistic consideration.
Now on to another player that's similarly highly rated, like Kelly and Barry, and that's Bailey Banfield. Rossi Lyon loves his hard tackling. He's actually a rookie, but of course this year they can play without having to be elevated. He's 20 years old, so a mature age player. Won the best and fairest in his Waffle team last year with Claremont. Collected 29 disposals and kicked 3 goals as a pressure forward in one of the JLT games, and basically looks like a lock, Mark.
Yep, lock him in.
potentially even a bloke that you might even want on field scoring for you. So
maybe
he certainly looks like a great option. Nick Holman's the last bloke that we have in the midfield to talk about at 102,400. Again, another recycled player, delisted by Carlton, played in the Sandford and then got re-recruited. Again, you'd think that he's a decent shot to get games like Brody, just because that midfield in the Gold Coast has some holes in it at the moment.
Yeah, obviously, depending on selections, Holman is an absolute lock at 102,000, I think. So now, I wouldn't normally try and be so prescriptive with the midfield rookies, but I think like it's actually all the midfield rookies basically I'm seeing lined up pretty much exactly the same, that most teams have Brayshaw, Kelly, Banfield, Barry, and Holman locked, depending on selections, and then adding in Brody as that extra one. And some people may have some preferences around those more expensive guys that I spoke about earlier.
Yeah. We've already talked about quite a few rookies that you could play on field, Mark. I mean, that's potentially three rookies on field in the midfield then, four rookies on field in the back line, which means that even if the four rookies are crap, which they, in comparison, are not as strong, might not even matter. You probably don't need to play a single rookie on field in the forward line if you didn't want to.
Yep.
Having said that, I'm sure that potentially might be an option regardless if there's a high-scoring player in the forward line. So we'll get to that shortly. But before we do the ruck rookies, Mark, the first bloke, Tim English, at 135,000 as a ruck forward swingman. So one of the few cheap-priced ruckmen that also available in the forward line. He played games last year in his debut season as a ruck. The Bulldogs, you'd think, would still eventually want him as their number one ruck. I mean, they're playing a combination of their tall forwards in the rucks at the moment, which is not ideal. Trengove arriving at Western Bulldogs wouldn't be brilliant for him either, but you'd still think he's a decent chance to play, you know, 5-10 games this season.
Yeah, maybe. I just think that the Sydney ruck situation probably makes it hard to pick him.
All right, let's go to that then. I mean, Darcy Cameron's the elephant in the room here at 124,000. And with Naismith going down and Sinclair being a little bit sketchy from round one, Darcy Cameron has shot right up in terms of consideration. He's basically locked in my team. I know people are looking at whether or not to play a loophole ruck instead, who's Tony Olango. He's the best option as a West Coast player. Most Sunday games in the league at only 102,000 is basement price, so you save a bit of dosh there. But basically Cameron via Olango for most people, Mark, and where do you sit on that side of the equation?
Had Darcy Cameron before, and I don't think he ended up playing a game for my team, so that was pretty disappointing. And I could see potentially that would happen again this year, but everything would have to go exactly right for that to happen. Sinclair doesn't have the greatest durability, and you'd think that Sydney might play two rucks at some stage and give him a shot. So I think that you've just got to go with the player that is likely to potentially get games. It might not work out. When you need him, he might not be there. But there's also the situation where when you need him, he has the best game of his season, and he goes on and makes a couple hundred thousand. Like, in a season where there's a lot of doubts around the rucks, I think that the fact that Cameron potentially offers some insurance means that you just got to pick him. I know that Olango is $20,000 cheaper and does offer some loophole inflexibility, but I'd find it very, very hard to justify taking Olango over Cameron.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. I know that there are a few people questioning, you know, whether or not it's such a, you know, cut and dry decision, but to me, it absolutely is. It was one of my learnings from last year was not to go greedy with picking a non-playing player who you can use as a loophole over a potential rookie option. And that was Mason Cox last year. You'd think Darcy Cameron's in an even, you know, better spot compared to Cox last year. Cameron is behind only Sinclair in the rucks. Like, they lost Tippett, they lost Naismith. I think we're lucky to have him as an option, considering when we talked about the rucks, we were worried that no ruckman might be able to play 22 games realistically this year. So, like you said, Mark, you still need a little bit of luck for that to go your way, but to me, it's a pretty easy choice.
Yeah, I think that, and we'll get to the danger discussion later, but I know a lot of teams are probably going to start without danger this year, which means that the captaincy issue is going to be really, really tricky, and it's probably going to be more season defining than it has in the past, potentially. And which means that getting a player to do the loopholes with is even more valuable. I guess that my philosophy on that is that we always have a rookie that gets dropped. We always have a player that gets injured that you're carrying. It's very rare that you actually have 30 players playing. And when you do, you might find that situation a bit annoying. But as far as cash generation and overall points go, I think that you're actually better off just having 30 players playing, having 30 players scoring points, potentially earning money, and most weeks that you need it, I think that you're going to have a player that will be able to provide that loophole for you.
All right, Mark, on to the forward line and the number one draft selection from last year, Cam Rayner. $203,000 is his starting price point, and he's a mid-forward flexible player. Hasn't scored brilliantly so far in the JLT with 31 and 71, but like you said, that might not mean he won't score in the season proper, and you'd think he'd get plenty of opportunities in a Brisbane side.
Yeah, yep. I think in previous seasons, I would have been more likely to pick him. I think that, as I sort of said at the start of the show, I've moved away from those expensive rookies a bit more, and especially over 200,000. Yeah, not really in consideration for my side. I could see him having a reasonable season, though. Yeah, just I haven't really considered him that seriously.
How about Jaden Stephenson? Was a pretty exciting pick because people considered him a bit of a slider. 180,000 as a forward mid, and potentially, as the experts say, one of the most talented draft selections from last year.
78% time on ground, average of 50 over the preseason. I think that he is a player that could potentially score higher than that in the real season. 180,000 is a lot of money, so you'd really want to be very sure that you want to play a rookie on field up forward, and very sure that you can't get a similar output from a much cheaper option. So I know he is in a lot of teams. I think I'd probably say it's a coin flip between him and Rayner, but neither of them really in consideration for my team.
As a high scoring option, you're potentially a little bit more nervous about him playing in your forward line, because even though he has high scoring potential, he's also the type that might fade out of games and put in the odd 30 or 40. But if he has, you know, a couple of big games in a row, his price could spike and he could be, you know, one of the highest cash generating rookies available. That tends to be the risk with higher variance players like Stephenson, who are a bit more of an explosive type. So it could work out either way.
Yeah, could. I'd say that the situation of him doing that, though, is like less than 10% of him like really exploding and being the highest cash generation rookie. So that's why he's not in my team.
Yep, agreed. He's not in mine either. Darcy Fogarty is the last expensive forward rookie we're going to talk about at $153,000. Wasn't really being looked at much, but then played as a tall forward in the JLT2, scored 3 goals, accumulated 87 Supercoach points, and all of a sudden, everyone's talking about him being a bargain draft selection and a potentially great Supercoach pick. Might struggle to get games, but when he does, you'd assume he'd score fairly decently playing for Adelaide as well.
Yep, really unsure of this one. He's definitely a gamble around selection and scoring potential. Might benefit from Walker being out of the side early. I don't know enough to side with the positive side on him, so I'm just a bit more wary and going to stay away.
How about Jared Garlett, Mark, at $117,000, playing for Carlton, a forward mid, was a supremely talented, highly rated draft selection with Gold Coast before he gave away the game for personal reasons. Drafted back into the league, and you'd think has a decent chance of playing a good amount of games this year.
Yeah, so injured himself early and in JLT, and so didn't get a lot of game time, but apparently he's going to be right for round one and has a really good chance of being selected for round one. So worries me a little bit that he's just going to be Jared Pickett again from last year, which was just so painful, putting up 30s and getting dropped. I think he's probably going to be a little bit better than that, but maybe not a lot. So look, if he's picked round one, I think he'll end up in a lot of teams given the Carlton play first and that there's going to be a lot of doubt over the forward rookies. So I certainly haven't ruled him out yet.
Yeah, I'm certainly more optimistic on him than Pickett. Pickett was literally this tiny, tiny bloke. And you know, although Garlett isn't ridiculously buff, he's a much taller player than Pickett is. And so he's a bit more of a physical presence and is less likely to get pushed around the ball as Jared Pickett was last year.
Okay.
How about Zach Giles Langdon for GWS at $117,000? He's a mature ager at 22 years old, played both JLT games. He's on the fringe of the GWS team, as we all know that's quite a strong team that they've got down there. So job security is probably a bit of the question mark there. But otherwise, 22-year-old mature age rookie playing for a team that is going to potentially push for the top four again ticks a few boxes there.
Yeah, it was interesting. There was a big article on Josh Kelly in the paper today, and they were talking about what GWS need to do differently to win the premiership this year. One of the main things that he was saying was around forward pressure, and that their ball use is really good, but they probably want to just put a bit more pressure on when they don't have the ball, and that it seemed to be sort of implied that Langdon might be able to play a role in that. His JLT numbers were a bit inhibited because he's picked up a bit of a shoulder injury at one point, but did manage to keep going. So, look, I think that where his scoring capacity is really uncertain. If he's named round one, I think they'll give him a few games to try and cement himself in that team, and I think he could turn out to be quite a decent forward rookie pick, especially since there's slim pickings down there this year.
How about Bailey Fritsch, Mark? I'm not even sure how he pronounced that. Is that right?
Sounds right to me.
117,000 recruited from the Casey Scorpions in the VFL last year, so a mature aged player. Scored 70 and 67 in the two JLT games and is probably one of the front runners in terms of a forward rookie and is in, I think, over 30% of Supercoach teams at the moment.
Given if he's named round one, which seems likely at least, given his goal kicking, that he'd be given a first shot at it, mature age, good pedigree. Yeah, absolutely. If he's named, you've got to lock him in.
How about Liam Ryan, Mark? It's another mature age selection who looks a decent chance to get games as well. Kicked 73 goals in the Waffle last year and has a lot of talent. Probably is another rookie that will struggle a bit in terms of consistency. Could have, you know, the big games where he manages to bag a few or crumb a few goals, but also, you know, playing that position and playing for West Coast, who might potentially slide this year with the retirements they had last year, could also notch in quite a few 30s and 40s. Yeah. Thoughts on Ryan, Mark?
I think he summed him up pretty well, mate. I think that he will be given first shot at it, you'd assume. If he can lock down a spot in the team, he could turn out to be an okay pick. You're really relying on a fair bit of luck involved with that sort of pick, where you just hope he has a big game or two in a row at the right time.
Well, and actually, he's the first of sort of three West Coast rookies in the forward line that might actually play round one. The next two are Willie Rioli and Dan Venables, both at 124,000. Do you have any thoughts on either of those two blokes? And do you have either of those two blokes ahead of Liam Ryan, Mark?
I don't. I really like the look of Willie Rioli. I think that he's going to have some decent games, but just carrying a few injuries, sort of got injured a couple of times playing in the preseason. So that would make me very wary of starting him now. I'm not sure that he'll be picked round one. Venables has an extra year in the system and missed most of last year than most of the rookies out there. But his scoring potential doesn't seem very good. He had 68% game time for 30 and 41 in the preseason, which is pretty terrible. So the only reason you'd pick him is because there's not many options around and he may have decent job security.
A former first round selection at pick 13 just last year. So does have talent up his sleeve. But like you said, scoring potential isn't as high as you'd expect from that draft pick. Another first round draft pick is Paul Ahern for North Melbourne. Moved over from GWS following a couple of knee reconstructions and looks like he might finally get some gigs this year. He's a forward mid rookie, so he does have DPP. He didn't make either of North's first two JLT games though, which is a bit of a worry.
He was in my first draft teams because I just expected him to be getting games, but it looks like he'll be coming through the VFL and hopefully he can put some games together and be a good downgrade target at some point.
Yeah, and I guess Jack Higgins is probably in the same boat, much hyped early on at 131,000 and being an absolute bull of a 19-year-old and averaging the highest ever Supercoach points in junior matches. With 145, but only played a little bit of JLT1, missed JLT2, and doesn't look like he's a good chance to start in the AFL in round one.
That's right. Hopefully another downgrade target.
Mm. So to wrap up the forward line market, we actually ended up with more rookies than I thought we would have at the start of the show. Yeah. So Rayner and Stephenson are expensive, but look like they'll get games. Fogarty might not get so much games, but has that scoring potential. And then Garlett, Giles Langdon, Fritch, Ryan, and Venables, all decent chance to get games. So yeah. What are we looking at? A five rookie forward line as well, Mark?
Yeah, we may as well just not have enough premiums in our side, take a million into the season. No, I think that there's probably enough, given what we've talked about, that you could have one on the field. I think that going two on the field is probably going too far, just because the ones in the forward line don't look like they're going to be great scoring.
Yeah. I think the front runners that I've seen in most teams are the two cheap, mature age players that look to start round one, and that's Fritch and Ryan for Melbourne and West Coast.
Yeah.
And then would you have sort of Giles Langdon and Garlett after that?
Yeah, that's right.
Before Venables?
Yeah, I've swayed. So those three, I've got Giles Langdon at the top of those three at the moment, but I'm still sort of working that out.
I'm assuming, though, because we're a bit more confident in potentially the forward line premiums and the back line premiums, that also factors into your decision-making as to how many sort of rookies you play on field in each position.
That's exactly right.
All right, Mark. So I think that is a fairly comprehensive rookie review. Before we knock off, one final question on the rookies. How many sort of expensive rookies is too much? Is there such a thing? If you have Norton, Brody, Brayshaw, Caulfield, Cole, Fogarty, is that too much? Like, where do you draw the line? Is it completely dependent on your team structure? And do you have any thoughts on that, Mark?
Yeah, it is really dependent on your team structure. And I think that three is probably a pretty good number, but four seems totally reasonable. I think if you start getting to five or six, you start probably getting yourself into a bit of trouble with cash generation and focusing too much on job security and points. So I think you've got to be a little bit discerning with how many of them you do take in. But it really is team dependent. What sort of other risks are you taking? What does your bench look like? How many rookies in each position have you got? What's the scoring potential of each of those rookies that you're picking? So there's a lot of factors to take into account, and I don't have like a really clear number that you could put on it.
Agree with that. All right, so let's move on to final questions before we head into lockout. First off, Paddy Dangerfield, in or out for you at the moment, Mark?
Out.
If he is listed round one?
Out.
Yep. I think I'm leaning to the same at the moment. I think especially with Fife and Martin both being starters in our current teams and having had smoother pre-seasons, we've got a couple of vice-captaincy, captaincy options there, plus Maxi Gawn, that Danger's importance becomes slightly lessened potentially. And ideally, you don't pick a bloke who's just trying to get over the line for round one.
It is Danger. Like, we do have to keep that in mind, that it is Dangerfield. And like as we saw against the Hawks, he went off. What did he go off on? A stretcher with a broken leg or something and came back on and kicked five. He has this ability to recover from injuries, which is really strong. But he also, when he was playing with broken ribs last year, he probably struggled in the weeks after that for about a 5-week stretch. I think that the issue for me is that, like, I was probably one of the few that was already at least contemplating not starting Danger. And that comes from a place of he is fully priced. I don't think that he can really punish you at that price. Like, he would have to start with a bunch, like 150 for the first 6 or 7 weeks and just be like an awesome captain pick each of those weeks, maybe post a 200 or something. Like, for him to actually hurt you as a selection is really, really difficult from his price, as long as you invest the money saved elsewhere. So from that perspective, I don't think that there's a heap of risk in leaving him out. And as you said, that it is Danger. We just need to be mindful of that. Like, Danger is a freak. He's the Ablett sort of level freak. He's the only player other than Ablett to ever back up 130 in a season. And so we do have to be mindful of that. But I just think that invested wisely, the money could be put to reasonable use, and you should be able to be okay.
Yeah. I think if Ablett didn't come down to Geelong, I'd be more likely to start Danger. But you add the fact that he's, you know, extremely expensive, just has had a hamstring injury, and Ablett's going to join the midfield. And with that, they're talking about Dangerfield spending a bit more time in the forward line. That raises a bit more question marks. I mean, I find myself surprisingly on the end of potentially leaving him out as well.
I just think that the most likely outcome if he starts round one is actually somewhere in between, that it doesn't really punish the non-starters and it doesn't really reward the starters. But I'd say that of the extreme results, the benefiting the non-starters is most likely to happen.
Well, I mean, he could average 120 from the first 5 weeks. That'd still take a fairly monster effort. And he's still, you know, 15 points off his starting price tag. Like, he had such a monster season last year that if you're not 100% on his selection, arguably, you're probably best off to hedge your bets elsewhere.
So the thing that some of the listeners that are starting him are going to be saying is, but how do you get him in? You've got to get him in straight away. How do you get him in?
Yeah. And that's a fantastic question, but you know, you can't predict the future. You might have to bring him in slightly later than you'd hoped. I mean, the worst case scenario is he starts off averaging 135 from the get go, and then you just get priced out until, you know, round seven. But
and then it costs you a lot to get him in. But
yeah, there's just not a whole bunch of options. I mean, if a premium gets injured, that's the point where you might side swap a premium and upgrade them to Dangerfield. So, you know, if Hibbard gets injured, you might swap Hibbard to Dangerfield and upgrade that way. So you can't predict the future. All you can do is do the best you can with the selections that you have available to you in the preseason, and then sort of come what may, to an extent. Like, what are you going to do anyway? Like, plan out a trade-in strategy from Dangerfield? Like, that seems equally naive.
Look, I think that a lot of people are actually thinking that the way, though. And I think that, as you suggested, like, you've got to pick a strategy and back your strategy. If you leave him out, then you're leaving him out and you're backing that strategy, and you'll figure out a way to get in once we know, like, a lot more. A lot is going to change in the next five rounds. You are not in a position to be able to predict what's going to happen over five rounds. So I think that if you're creating a strategy to bring him in, that's good to have in the back of your mind, but it's probably not going to go like that. Or if you're, like, holding cash to bring him in just in case he goes off well, like, that's just undermining the rest of your team and not actually backing the strategy of leaving him out.
I agree. And so that bleeds in nicely with the people who are asking questions about, you know, whether or not they should leave extra cash on bench if they don't start with Dangerfield. So basically, instead of having 750K invested in Dangerfield, invest 650K in a primo midfielder and have 100K up your sleeve to be able to side swap or make an earlier upgrade to Dangerfield. I think, like, that seems like a poor strategy because you're hedging your bets each way. So if Dangerfield smashes it, you're not in a brilliant spot because you're better off just starting him. If Dangerfield sucks to start the season, then you have 100K sitting there that's not properly invested in your team. So I think the best way to go about it is just to commit to your strategy, take a position, and take the punt. Like, at some stage in Supercoach, you kind of just need to take calculated risks. You're almost worth hedging your bets. It's a similar situation as in seasons past where, you know, you've seen a bloke break out from mid-price to premium, and then the question goes, well, should I get on the train? Is it too late to get on the train? And in most instances, it is, because once they've broken out and they're now priced like a premium, you're better off hoping, like, even if they're going to score like that every single week, you're better off hoping they get injured and at least that you profit when it goes wrong for everybody else. By hedging your bets and trading into a player after everybody's got them at a cheaper price, like, you're only behind the eight ball. And that just comes down to strategy. If you want to win Supercoach, you need to choose a position and then just go with it. If you keep flip-flopping between positions, you just end up being behind anyone that has taken a committed position either way.
100% agree, mate.
Does that make sense?
No, totally agree. It's an investing game based off limited information, and it's not a game where you can hedge and wait for more information. You just have to leap with the information that you have.
All right. So just a couple of final questions before we sign off. This one's from Carl, and it's about Christensen. We got a few questions about our love for Christensen because he's had pretty average JLTs, but both of us have reinforced that he's been locked in our team for a while now. Kyle's question is, are we not concerned about JLT and his scoring during that time?
Yeah, I'm concerned. I'm 90% still to start him. I think sometimes you just got to bite the bullet. If he's fit and he's had premium numbers in the past on more than one occasion, and he's priced really cheaply, yeah, you just got to assume that maybe role and what he does in the JLT is not necessarily what's going to happen in the main season. And I just think of Mark Murphy in that situation. He came back and he was pretty terrible over the preseason last year and then just completely dominated the season. The preseason games are sometimes just about getting a bit of touch rather than performing.
Yeah, I agree with that. And if you look at the other options at that price range. Like, are you really going to take Rayner or Stevenson when you have Christensen available who has previously averaged 85 plus for three or more seasons? So, I mean, even though he hasn't had a brilliant JLT, the value prop is still brilliant. How about Jamie Wiley's question here asking about Tom Bell? We have had quite a few people look at him late in the piece. Yeah. Have you considered Bell at all?
He's come into the discussion. I think it'd be very hard to pick Christensen and Bell. Christensen's got more numbers in the past. Bell does have one season at Carlton where he averaged just below 90, I think was a while ago now. Much, much better JLT numbers from Bell, though. But I think Christensen, and this, look, I'm probably just justifying the position that I've already taken, but Christensen doesn't need to perform in the JLT to find a spot, but Bell probably does.
So thanks, Mark, for another great preseason. And that wraps up this week's show and our preseason series. Again, we've done the four positional shows and then done a JLT and rookie wrap up this week. So please go back and listen to the series if you haven't already. We design it to be equally relevant at the end of the preseason as in when we record it. So hopefully if you listen to the five shows, it should set you up for a pretty good season 2018. Mark, is there anything else that you want to discuss with our listeners before we sign off for the week or for the preseason?
No, mate, I'm feeling pretty good about the season though. Feeling fit after a solid preseason. Happy that I didn't pick up any injuries and ready to go for round one.
All right. Don't forget our Supercoach Coach leagues and groups to join up for that, and patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you're looking for bonus content. Mark and I have released a team that we picked together. So a template that you could use to select your own teams with. We think that's pretty helpful. And last year that seemed to set up our Patreons for top 20 league success. So hopefully it does the same this year, Mark.
Yeah. Yep. So final message would be take a few risks, balance your risk, but pick a few players that maybe not everyone has or that maybe have a lot of upside, but maybe some downside as well. So don't just pick easy players to pick. Yeah, I think that if you want to get ahead, you've got to take a few risks, but not just it's about balancing them throughout your team.
For next week's show, Mark, you'll be taking a week off, so we'll miss you. But Dunny and Faz will join us for their first podcast of the 2018 season. So our listeners have that to look forward to, and they can do a bit of a team reveal then.
If I post the highest score for round one, I may just call in just to talk about that.
Brilliant. And you'll be joining us the week after regardless, Mark, for the pre-price change episode. So we'll look forward to that anyway. Thanks again for another great preseason, mate. And good luck with lockout.
Thanks, buddy. You too.
See ya.
See ya.